Life is made up of decisions. Some are large, some are small, and some are uniquely individual, and some are thrust upon us. Either way, the decisions we make at these critical crossroads determine the direction of our life story. Welcome to our podcast, If I Knew Then What I Know Now, Insights Through the Rearview Mirror. By sharing the decision-making process of highly successful people in their own lives, and what they have learned both about decision-making and the importance of considering the alternatives, we hope to help you make better and more productive decisions in your life. This podcast will help you consider all your decisions through a new lens. My name is John Kramer, and along with my partner in crime, my brother Paul, we will interview a wide range of successful friends and acquaintances to understand the decisions they have made in life and what they have learned both about decision-making and the importance of reflecting on the process. Thanks for tuning into our Insights Through the Rearview Mirror podcast series. Today, we're trying something new. Paul and I are going to be tag-teaming, speaking with a very special guest, a family member who has led an interesting journey from social worker to executive and relationship coach, teacher, and yoga instructor, our former sister-in-law, Lisa Kramer.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I'm great. It's really nice to be here with both of you.
It's great to have you, Lisa. For our listeners, you know, you should know that Lisa has led a very interesting journey with many twists and turns, but always centered on being more engaged, focused, and continuing to build a constructive, insightful life for herself and others, and a very altruistic approach to life. Lisa, as from listening to our podcast, we always start by asking the question whether there is a framework or a construct that you use for making life decisions. And we'd like to ask you that same question as we begin today's discussion.
Well, yes, I do. And I call it my internal guidance system, or IGS. And this is a navigational system that guides me in decision-making. I think of it as like my inner GPS or roadmap. It's something that has helped me in making all kinds of decisions in my life, small ones, big ones. And it's really about tapping into my intuition.
So that's very much of a gut decision, your intuition.
It is, and at the same time, it's not exclusively a gut decision, but I think that there's data that enters into it. But I think at the end of the day, when it comes to making the decision, it is more relying on my gut, or I call it like checking in with my heart more than my gut.
So is there a process there, or is it just thinking through different kind of outcomes and working those out for yourself? Is there a specific process that you follow?
There is a process. It actually is a little different each time, but it's something that everybody really can have access to. And it involves, first of all, quieting the mind, because when you have a lot of mind chatter going on, it's really difficult to access that intuition or that inner knowing. So it requires quieting your mind, which could be meditation, it could be taking a walk in nature, it could be journaling. So I think it's different for everybody. And I tend to do all of those things at different times. But I find that absolutely having a quiet mind and getting that chatter to calm down is really critical in the inner GPS to speak to me.
One of the guests that we spoke to a couple of weeks ago talked about, I'll summarize it. It's not exactly what he said, but it's sort of like no decision before it's time, that no decision has to be made today. As much as we want to react and say, okay, here's what I want to do, or I've got to make a decision, here's my decision. It's more like letting it sit and percolate and then getting clarity. I know that works for me. As much as it's against my approach to the world, it works pretty well for me. And is that really what you're talking about? Letting things percolate, letting things sit for a while before you go on and decide which way to go?
I would say it depends. So if it's a little decision, it may not take as long to percolate. But if it's a larger one, like when I decided to sell my townhouse 6 years ago or end a 23-year marriage, those are huge decisions. And I absolutely agree, there's both readiness and timing. Because even if you think you want to do something and move in a certain direction, sometimes you're not really ready yet, or it isn't time, and it's waiting until the right time, which is not always easy to know.
So
yes,
go ahead, Paul. Sorry.
I was thinking that's a really good point, which is so often we want to get the decision done with, make the decision, move on, and get it in the rear view mirror. But it's so important. I agree with both of you guys that it's so important to let it settle for a while, give it time to really consider.
Yeah. And especially when sometimes it's not just about us, right? So when we make a big decision, it's going to impact maybe family members. It may impact business associates. So it's also thinking about, like, how is this decision that I'm about to make going to impact the people around me who are important and I care about them? So that's part of it too.
So let's get into this a little bit deeper, because this is a different direction or different framework than we've talked about before. So you graduated from college with a degree in psychology, and then you decided to continue your studies with an advanced degree at the University of Philadelphia. So what was the driving decision that took you to continuing your studies? Was it a look to the long term? Was it interest in pursuing more? What was it? How did that process? How did the IGS system work into that process?
I wish I could say I even knew what an IGS was in those days. I did not. I was 22 years old. I was getting ready to graduate from undergrad, and I really didn't know what I wanted to do, except I knew I wanted to help people. And I decided to pursue a master's in social work at University of Pennsylvania. I think the driver was I want to help people, but in retrospect, that was such an opportunity for me to learn and grow for myself. So it was both an opportunity for personal growth, and then it was professional development. But I wasn't really clear when I made the decision to go for my master's in social work exactly what I wanted to do with it.
It was funny. A lot of people we talked to say, hey, I graduated from college. I wasn't ready to go to work yet. So, hey, more schooling seemed like a good idea.
Exactly.
It seems like that. But so while we're jumping a bit here, something we wanted to hit on was a recent article where you were quoted as saying, it's a shame to let fear get in your way. What did you mean by this? And how do you employ your decision framework to be sure you avoid this fear of fear cycle?
So I think as humans, we're hardwired to want to know, like we want certainty. And when it comes time to making a decision, a lot of times there's uncertainty. Like we can't possibly know every outcome of the decision we're going to make. And so when there's that uncertainty, a lot of times there's fear. And fear can stop people from making the decision because they want to know what's going to happen. And so what I've learned is no big decision really comes without fear. And fear, some people say fear is false evidence appearing real. So you can make up a story in your head. Oh my God, what if this happens? What if this happens? But the truth is, if you can just let the fear be and trust that it's going to be okay, regardless of what happens, then you'll move forward. And that's really what I've learned to do, is to just trust that it's going to be okay. I actually have a process that I use called visualization, which is connecting with what is the outcome that I want here. And I spend time kind of visualizing that outcome. It's what's my why here? And that can oftentimes help me get past the fear and keep moving forward.
I love that false evidence appearing real. That's the acronym for fear.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, John and I have talked about that. So many decisions in our lives are defining decisions, but they're not the final defining decisions. So each decision is a step forward in a process. There are some huge decisions we make. Selling a house could be a huge decision. Who we marry, obviously, is a key decision. But other decisions can be moved back in line or can be changed to a degree. So fear shouldn't be, wow, this is it. I'm at a crossroads now. And if I make a decision, my life's going to come, can come to an end or cannot. And I think that's a lot of what people drive at. Let me get back on track for a second. After you graduated from University of Pennsylvania, and I gather that you got to the point where you said, oh, I really need to get into the workforce at some point. You went to Widener University and you did work there, practicing in a variety of areas. And you were responsible for designing curriculum and recruiting faculty in their social marketing area. But then you made a decision that you wanted to leave the relatively safe world of academia and become an executive coach. I know that's always a big decision, Lisa, because you're changing career directions. What prompted you to make that decision at that time?
I had gotten to a point where I felt I had spent 10 years teaching and working at Widener, and it was a fantastic, I loved the work, I loved teaching, I loved my colleagues, but I also was starting to just feel like I was stagnating. And I am somebody that I do thrive on variety and change. I'm one of those weird people who really likes change a lot. And I found out about coaching and I went for my coaching certification. And I think I waited probably 3 years from the time I started my coaching certification till the time I actually resigned from my faculty position. So that goes back to the readiness and timing. Like, it wasn't time until it was. But I remember I just had this feeling like in my body. It was a September and the academic year was starting. And that's a time of new beginning and usually is exciting. And I just had this feeling of, I can't spend another year on this campus. I need to go. Because it was academia, I gave them a lot of notice because they have to plan for the next year. But I had about 10 months of really getting myself ready to leave and to get my coaching business off the ground.
And that led to Leading with Intention.
Yes.
And that's the company that you're currently driving forward with.
Exactly. So the business started as Living with Intention, because that's really who I am. I am somebody who lives very much intentionally, and I was doing more life coaching then. But as I shifted into doing more leadership and executive coaching, then I also changed the name to Leading with Intention.
You were raising two kids. You were getting your certification. You were training. That's a lot going on. So I applaud you, Lisa, for finding the motivation to go forward to make that change with everything that you were juggling at that time.
I have to say, Eric, your brother, was incredibly supportive of those decisions that I made. And I think that even though we ultimately didn't stay together, I really appreciated having a spouse who supported me in those decisions, because that's really important.
A major decision, which you just brought up, I know you must have struggled with for years and obviously affected your entire family and broader family, was your separation from Eric after 20 plus years of marriage. And we know from living that this is a very hard decision. We just know that obviously a separation after 20 years is an incredibly hard decision. How did your construct work here? How did you get ready to have that decision or make that decision and go down that path?
Yeah, that was a tough one, because I think I knew for a while before we actually separated that was something that I wanted to do, but I had two kids. That goes back to decisions impacting others. And I wanted to make sure that this was going to go as smoothly as possible, even though when it comes to the breakup of a marriage, obviously there's going to be challenges along the way. But my younger son was a freshman in college, and it felt a little bit easier at that time because both of the boys were at school. I also needed to feel that confidence within myself that I could do this and be okay. And I just want to share a quick story of something that happened that I felt was like a sign from the universe. So it was the fall of 2007, and I was, seriously thinking about making this separation. And a call literally came out of the blue one Friday afternoon. And it was this business owner from my area who had, somebody had referred him to me for executive coaching. And at that point, I was doing very little executive coaching. I was just starting to get my feet wet. And I was a little bit nervous, but he said, I'm looking to bring a coach into my business and I'd like to meet with you and see where it goes. And we met the following week. He hired me on the spot. And that year was the first year that my company broke six figures, which was a huge accomplishment for me. And so that was one of those signs that I felt like, okay, I'm going to be okay. So it was, I guess you can call it like serendipity or synchronicity, but that was part of what helped me to know I could make this decision and be okay.
Let me jump in here quick for 1 second, because one of the things that's a conversation, frequent conversation in my household, is jumping and letting the universe help you decide, what leaving things to the universe. And that's something that's for those of us that live in a more black and white world, that's a difficult concept to deal with. But Lisa, you brought it up, and that's something I'd like to get a little bit deeper into, this whole thought of that things will become clear. If you enable them and allow them, clarity will, the sun will come up and you'll be able to see your way forward. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think it's really important to emphasize that this is not like, oh, just sit in your house and don't worry and things will just work out fine. You don't have to do anything. Like, it's, I call it a both and. Like, we have to be clear in our intentions. What is it that we want? And I talked earlier about even taking time visualizing what we really want and connecting with the feelings, like the positive emotions that are related to achieving what we want, and taking some steps, like actually doing something to move in that direction. Because what I have found in my own life, and I hear this a lot from clients, is when you don't pay attention. So I talked about that quiet voice, and we call it our intuition that is there to guide us. A lot of times people either don't listen to it or they don't even know that's happening. And there are ways that they avoid things. And then they get that big wake up call. And the wake up call could be, it could be a health issue. It could be a work crisis. It could be any number of things. And, you know, I'm not suggesting that like I'm immune to any of that, because I'm human like the rest of us. It's just that I think when you can take that time to really tune in and pay attention to what is your intuition trying to speak to you, what's it trying to say, it can actually help you prevent some of those more catastrophic wake-up calls that come when you don't listen. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does make sense. And I think that because we've spoken to a lot of people, and Paul and I talk frequently, and we try to pull similar kinds of thoughts and approaches and tie them together. And one of the things that I keep coming back to a lot when I think about the conversations we've been having is this whole idea of sitting, this whole idea of taking time that I worked for a guy for a long time who used to always say to me, no decision before it's time. And I never really understood what he was saying, but that's essentially what you're talking about, is that you need to ruminate, you need to let things sit, you need to get comfortable with big decisions, and they shouldn't be made overnight, and they don't need to be made overnight. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. One thing that I'll add to that is that sitting can be incredibly uncomfortable for people, especially if you tend to be someone who is inclined to like go, I want to just make that decision quickly, and that's how you live your life. Having patience in making a decision can feel really uncomfortable. And at the same time, if you don't take that time, you know, the likelihood of making a bad decision is, I think, is much higher. So it's learning how to sit. And I think that's why meditation has become so popular these days, not only just to help reduce stress, but it's also really helpful in the decision-making process and slowing down and not rushing too quickly.
One of the things that a lot of our guests have spoken about, and I think is appropriate to bring in here, is the importance of your network, is the importance of having people to bounce things off of, to talk about, somebody who knows you and that you can be comfortable talking with. Is that sort of a part of this whole process?
It's interesting. It was a bigger part of the process for me earlier on. And I certainly do have a lot of people in my life that I go to for who are like thinking partners and sounding boards and that sort of thing. But I'll also say that the more that I pay attention to my own IGS and have learned really to tune into that, the less I feel like I need to reach out to others. I think it's great to have that network when you're first using this. Maybe it's a different way of operating from what you're used to. And then it just starts to get easier and easier.
Lisa, I wanted to jump backwards for a second to the discussion about the timing of your separation and doing it when both your boys had left for college. And I think it's worth for our listeners to, for those who have not yet reached that gate in life, you were, I know personally that you were very involved parents with your children's upbringing, and that probably became the center of your and Eric's life, waking up with the kids, figuring out how to take care of them, get them where they need to go, and just 100% focus on that. And then you get to this gate where the kids are off to school, and all of a sudden you and your spouse are sitting there looking at each other, having taken this huge part of your life away. And you sit there and say, oh my God, now it's me and this other person. What do we do? And I think that is such a common gate that so many people, so many parents, all parents, you might say, reach at some point in their lives. You took quite a while to make the decision. That was a juncture in your life where it was a good time to separate. Can you talk about your feelings about that? And for our listeners who are going to be reaching that gate at some point, what that's all about.
So one thing I will say about Eric and I is that we were a couple that we worked at our relationship. We went for counseling, we did different workshops and things. So we did pay attention to like what needed to be paid attention to. And I think in some situations, people do change. It always sounds so cliche, like we grew apart. But I think that we were ultimately on different paths. And I feel very grateful that we were able to separate in a really, I think, very positive way, all things considered, and are still friends today. But one thing I will say to the listeners, and it's really, I'm happy that you brought this up, Paul, because part of the work I'm doing right now is relationship coaching with couples. I think because I have learned so much from my own personal experience and being trained clinically before I moved into coaching, working with couples, and now as a coach, I just really encourage people to do the work, not to wait until the relationship is, there's no life left in it. And then it's, we need to go get some help. At that point, it's usually too late. But if you're feeling like, I know this can be better, or I know we have some differences that we need to address, don't wait. And coaching is a great way. It's different than counseling because it's much more looking toward the future and what do we want to design together as a couple now that we're empty nesters, or one of us is retired, that sort of thing. So it's very strengths-based, and I'm not in any way negating therapy. It's great, and it was very helpful for me. It just, coaching has a little bit of a different approach.
Can you talk a minute about your perspective on the difference between coaching and therapy? I mean, coaching is new to the world, and just from an outsider's perspective looking in, when I think about therapy, I think about this law that goes on for years. When I think about coaching, it's like, how do we deal with this right now? How do we address a problem and come to a solution? It seems more active-based versus introspective, dealing with this whole complexity of the mind-based? If that makes sense.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. Once upon a time, I do think that therapy was a very long-term process. And over time, I think that has changed. Certainly, there are still many people who are in therapy for a long time, but I do think that there's really effective short-term therapy or shorter term. Excuse me. The focus tends to be more on what has occurred in the past that is negatively impacting you in the present, and how can you both gain some awareness about that and also learn some tools so that you can function better in life. And in coaching, it's let's look at what's here today and what is it that you want going forward. So if it's leadership coaching, how can we work together to help you to be a stronger, more effective leader? If it's parent coaching, how can we work together to help you be a stronger, more effective parent? If it's relationship coaching, it's the same as a couple. So it's taking what's here today and looking toward the future, and how can you move forward successfully to have more satisfaction and achieve what you want to achieve. So it tends to be a little more goal-oriented, I think, than therapy is.
Lisa, you are both a life coach and executive coach now. I always wondered, but you've really never been in an executive position. You've never worked for a corporation. You've never worked for a private company as an executive. Can you explain to the listeners, you certainly are qualified to be a life coach. Executive coach, how does that skill set play into your background?
I'm fortunate, I think, because I got into coaching early, that I was able to make that transition relatively smoothly. And I think getting opportunities like the one I shared earlier with this local business gave me the confidence to just apply for other coaching opportunities. I've been actually affiliated with the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania since about 2006, for 15 years. And the basic fundamental skills of coaching apply, whether you're a life coach or a leadership coach or a wellness coach. There's basic skills of how do you listen? How do you ask good questions? How do you provide structure and accountability for your clients so that they can successfully move forward? And within each of those different specialties, there are some differences. For example, as a leadership coach, there are certain leadership competencies that my clients are working on, like how to develop their emotional intelligence so that they can be better listeners and have better communication with their teams, or how do they do a better job at delegating or strategic thinking, that sort of thing. So I've had to learn quite a bit along the way. But one thing about coaching that has been very liberating for me is that I don't have to be the expert. I don't have to have walked in that person's shoes to coach them effectively. What I need to be able to do is help them get clear about what is it that they're going for so that they can get to that next level of success. And then we partner together. So I describe myself as like a thinking partner, a good listener, someone who can provide that kind of safe space for people. Just even thinking out loud is sometimes so rare when you're working, you know, long, hard hours. Coaching provides that space to just press the pause button and let me just think out loud here. And having that objective sounding board who is there to really support you in your success, it goes a long way.
Never having the benefit of having an executive coach and having been an executive for more years than I care to count. And after your answer, I really wish I had taken the opportunity or taken advantage of having an executive coach, because when you talk about interpersonal relations, you talk about visualizing where you want to be, are not really as they're pertinent to any executive who's trying to figure out how to bring a team together, how to build a culture in the organization, and having someone to bounce those types of things off of could be incredibly valuable. And as I said, I wish that I had the advantage of doing that.
Yeah, it's, of course, I'm biased, but I think everybody can benefit from having a coach. I actually work with a coach myself, and I find it to be super helpful.
So quite a journey, and something I wanted to speak to you about, and one of the reasons both Paul and I wanted to be with you today on the phone, is most times in a divorce, the family has to pick sides. Today, 10 years after your divorce, you remain one of our family's closest friends. In fact, I continually refer to you as my sister-in-law. Did you consciously work to get to this place, or did it happen by happenstance?
You and I chatted about this briefly, and I will give a lot of credit to your wife, Amy, because Amy and I obviously are very close friends. And so the end of my marriage did not end our friendship at all. If anything, probably made it stronger. And I think that relationship has kept us in contact. And so she's certainly someone to receive credit. I think in addition to that, the fact that Eric and I are on such good terms, and I know there are many divorced people who are not on good terms with their former spouses, and that's really hard, but that certainly has made it a lot easier. Just the fact that the three of us can be doing this podcast together is amazing to me.
So it's been a really long and interesting road. And with the benefit of being able to look in the rearview mirror, you've made so many decisions. And if you think about life as a highway, you've continued to take the off ramp as often as you could. As you look back through all of these decisions, is there anything, now that you've got your GPS system, is there anything that you would do differently? And what is, importantly, what is your takeaway from looking in the rearview mirror that you can offer to our listeners?
So one thing that, and this is something I continue to work on, even in my 60s, it's about trusting myself and trusting that, as I said earlier, that regardless of the decision that's made, things will be okay. That even if the outcome isn't exactly what you had hoped for, there's always huge learning and opportunities to grow as a person. And not making a decision and letting the fear keep you in a stuck place, to me, that's far worse. So I would say really trust in yourself and trust the process. And I also think having that outside person, whether it's a coach or a therapist or a good friend, but somebody who can be that sounding board for you is super important, especially when you're faced with a big decision.
It's funny that you bring that up. And one thing that Paul and I talk about this a lot, is that if you're not a little uncomfortable with the decision, if it's too easy, it's probably not the right decision. Today, I think that we as a society face so many changes, so many curveballs. No matter who you are, no matter what you do, whether it's a pandemic coming out of the ether and changing all of our lives, or there's so many changes that are happening now, so many things that are coming at us so quickly, it really does make sense to realize that you got to sit and take time to understand, to take time to look at the impact, and that if you're not a little uncomfortable all the time, you're not growing, you're not changing, you're not adjusting. Does that make sense?
Yes, I agree 100%. I don't know that we have to be uncomfortable like all of the time, but I think that discomfort does come with the territory when you're making changes and you're taking some risks that, as you said, John, if you're not even a little uncomfortable, you're not stretching yourself enough. You're maybe taking the easy way out.
You know, Lisa, you mentioned fear, false evidence appearing real, which is just a continuation of what you've been talking about. And I think that for our listeners, anybody who is making a decision should understand that there's going to be a fear. But as you so articulately put it, to move through that fear is critical in terms of life-defining decisions. I also really appreciated your comment about the internal guidance system and the fact that you didn't have an internal guidance system early on in your life, early on in your career. And I think that having people, even younger people who are listening to this now, start to realize they need to get in touch with that internal guidance system as early as they can. And that's really been the whole point of this podcast, which is we make decisions in life, but so rarely do we really give them the critical thought that they deserve. I think your internal guidance system really brings that forward. Lisa, I cannot thank you enough for joining us today. It's been so wonderful talking to you and hearing your story. And thank you so, so much.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here with both of you.
For our listeners, if you have any questions about anything that we've covered today, or you want to connect with us, if you have any thoughts on people that we should be speaking with, or if you would like to be on our podcast, please contact us through our website, www.rearviewinsights.com. That's www.rearviewinsights.com. Please take a moment to rate and review our podcast so that we have an idea of how we're doing. And remember to tune in next week as we conduct another discussion, Unlocking Insights Through the Rearview Mirror. Lisa, again, thank you.
You've been listening to Insights Through the Rearview Mirror. Each week, we speak with interesting people, exploring their decision-making processes to understand how these change their lives. Check out our past guests at www.rearviewinsights.com and click on the link to listen on iTunes. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate us, and leave a comment. Until next Friday, this is John Kramer, wishing you insightful and successful decision-making.